We are going to be talking with J.P. Sotillia, the news vandal, momentarily, and I couldn't be more delighted. As per usual, J.P. will be laying down for us the latest and greatest hits inside the headlines. Each week, we are fortunate enough to be able to get J.P.'s perspectives on things, and as usual, quite a week that's underfoot. I will start, by the way, with Mr. Sotillia by saying newsvandal.com is his website, and if you want to get on his daily rundown of headline links with just organized like a nice garden, no commentary, although if you go from top to bottom, each day you sort of get a pretty clear pulse with stories that come from both sides of the aisle and give you an opportunity if you want to pursue them, and they come in the morning here for us in the Midwest here. But J.P. Sotillia, the news vandal, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm lamenting the fact that I'm not in Iowa right now, beloved Iowa and beloved Fairfield. No, I'm here. Alas, I'm not able to go to the Iowa State Fair, the political event of the summer, where if you are lucky enough and you go out just outside of the fair because you're no longer allowed to do it inside of the fair, you can take a ride on Donald Trump's personal helicopter. Now, wow. You're talking about perspective in the intro, and if you want to get a perspective on the whole thing, what better way to get perspective on what's happening than to get into Donald Trump's helicopter and fly over the Iowa State Fair? Some people might think he's better suited to take you up in a hot air balloon, but I don't want to cast aspersions.
Well, particularly if it was made out of butter, you don't want to get in that hot air balloon. But that's a famous butter cow. For the
give
Iowa.
Them a little pat of butter and everything will be okay.
You bet. I tell you what, we're going to jump in to the week that was relatively quickly here. But first of all, I have to say that blast up there near Beijing in the port there felt 2 kilometers, windows taken out 2 kilometers away. Wow. Any quick reflections on that? I don't know what the final... The death toll, I think, is mounting, and so many wounded, critically injured. What a mess. I don't know how this is going to come down, but amazing. Boy, that's a lot of stuff to have around that's explosive. What's your quick take on that?
Well, I guess one thought would be, is there some sort of internal terrorism problems because of the ethnic Uyghur out in the far west of China, who are not known for being terrorists, but could it be blamed on them? But that doesn't seem to be it. This seems to be an industrial accident. One problem, and it's the problem that we've faced over the years in China's own assessments of its economy, which now seem to be crumbling, melting faster than the Iowa Butter Queen's likeness carved out of a wonderful giant tub of butter. This, we don't know if we are going to ever know all of the details of what happened, all of the reasons, and whether they are completely forthright about those reasons and what exactly happened. Now, the flip side of that, and that's something that I've noticed today, and there was a story on the rundown today about it, it is exposing that there is a general distrust amongst Chinese of their government's regulation of chemicals, regulation of chemical safety, and willingness to report on difficult chemical safety issues. And I think that's the interesting texture here. I'm not saying it's not interesting and it's not tragic that people blew up in this massive explosion, but I think over the long run, this is yet another opportunity for a fissure to open up between the Chinese government and the Chinese people, who have become ever more emboldened over the course of the last 10 years as their standard of living has risen, as they have flooded out from the interior into the coastal cities, have become more and more networked, the government's desire to clamp down on the internet notwithstanding, and have become a little bit more vocal in their objections to government corruption. And this may then end up becoming a bigger story about government corruption than it is about the explosion itself.
Well, fascinating. I know to see 10,000 cars charred, that's just one, 11 tons of TNT or what the latest, I mean, this was just a massive thing going down, but one of many things going down across the globe, around the globe. And let's jump in. If you don't mind, anything else you want to reflect on? Because we usually do a little bit of
Yeah, and I think the only other thing that I'm watching is just before we came on the air, it does seem to be official confirmation that the Islamic State was deploying some form of mustard gas in fighting as a weapon of war. And, you know, I know there are a lot of thoughts and theories about what's going on with the Islamic State. Are some of these shocking videos stage managed? Are they real? So on. All I will say is this, is the Islamic State, whether or not there are convoluted forces working behind it, we don't, you know, to what extent the Saudis are behind it, what extent other intelligence agencies are going inside and out of it, you know, because essentially the United States has had a very difficult time identifying who to align itself with in this battle inside Syria that's spilled over into Iraq. But I will say this, the Islamic State is doing everything possible to try and draw the United States and the world into its epic apocalyptic battle that it is so desirous of, doing everything it can to draw them into that fight.
Well, and I will say this is going to be a double dose of cynicism twice removed on the rocks. But also, I mean, who knows how many people want this to escalate? It may not only be them, and it'll be interesting to see.
Well, right. I mean, you can get to the point of, where did they get the mustard gas? There, I saw some things where, you know, well, maybe they got it from an old stockpile. I've looked at the WMD issue as it relates to Saddam Hussein many, many times over. The bottom line is once the sanctions began and the UN inspections began after the first Gulf War, there is a shelf life for things like mustard gas and shelf life for things like anthrax. And even if those things somehow survived all of the inspections up to the point at which the second war began, the Iraq War began, they would mostly have been inert. They were no longer active. Their shelf life had run out. It's actually a lot of these weapons takes a lot of care and a lot of cooling and a lot of proper storage to keep them active for a long period of time. So you could make the case, is this Turkey silently passing mustard gas along? Is this Assad, who had mustard gas preserved, putting that into the fight, and then it gets blamed on ISIS? Your point is well taken, James. That's the thing. It's such a convoluted situation. But once you put the chemical weapons out on the table.
Yeah, it's definitely no question about that. I also, it just reminds me when Senator Charles Grassley actually came to Fairfield during those early years after the invasion, when people were scrambling to prove and just wait for about those weapons of mass destruction that they're going to be found, and they've been hidden, they've been moved. And I remember that week when it was reported, well, they found weapons of mass destruction. Well, it ended up being a canister of some of this stuff, very, very old. And I remember there he was down in the basement talking to this group of about 30 people saying, well, there it is. And I put my hand up and said, but that is this. And so, I mean, it's interesting to see how these things come around and go around. But speaking of that, let's jump into the week that was. I have to say that report by the journalist in Iran talking to as many people across the spectrum as possible was quite revealing, too, in unexpected ways, as some that you would expect. But I thought that was quite a little marker, didn't you?
Yeah, that's the Jewish Daily Forward. A journalist who had lived in Iran in the 70s leading up to the fall of the Shah, applied for years to get a visa in Iran, finally gave him a journalist visa, went in and spoke with clerics, spoke with some clerics who don't want to make an issue of Israel. There were some who wanted to make an issue of Israel, insofar as they want to see a two-state solution. Nobody's saying that they have any animus against the Jewish people, that those who had animus against the Jewish state. what really came up over and over again, James, and I know you took note of this, was the fact that the Palestinians and the plight of the Palestinian people is forefront. It's actually, it's, you know, I think we've talked about, and I just say we as sort of a media complex, the media industrial complex has talked about Iran's nuclear program as sort of the elephant in the room that needs to be dealt with. Well, this is an Iran nuclear weapons program that both the Mossad and the U.S. National Intelligence Estimate said was basically ended in 2003. And we can, you know, our listeners know all of that, that this nuclear program, nuclear weapons program they gave up really wasn't even a nuclear weapons program anymore. But that being said, the elephant in the room continues to this day to be the occupied territories. It continues to be the Palestinian people. And the interesting thing is that over the course of the last 15 years, the Palestinians have lost all of their traditional allies, save one, the Iranian government and the Iranian people and the Iranian clerics who have so much power inside Iran. And then the other side of it, too, is, and I know that you probably took note of this as well, is just the fascinating diversity and pliability of the Iranian people themselves, aside from the government and aside from the clerics, and their desire and willingness to be engaged in the world.
Well, I got a kick out of the assessment that the journalist drew up. There's the people, there's the government, and then what he called the deep state. And, you know, as much as we've talked about some, doesn't that sound kind of familiar?
Well, yeah.
I mean, to like...
That's in other words, Iran is a member of the world community.
Well, and, you know, that's the amazing thing about it. When you're painting, when you want to demonize somebody, you want all those communist Cubans to all be, you know, low-life, blood-sucking, whatever, threat, hate, haters. And if whoever you're demonizing with the Iranians... You talk and you see there's, and of course they know who they're talking to, and all that factored in. This is not some whitewash one way or the other, but it was just an interesting piece. And say what you want, Iran's been around a long time. When we were not even glints in Europe's eyes, you know. And so that said, it's just interesting, JP, when you talk to the people. I don't know if you heard much of the. In Planet Earthswild today, talking with Ava De Rover, a marvelous musician out of Belgium, talking about a three-week trip they took to Israel and Palestine, talking with musicians, Palestinian and Israeli, and how the conclusion was how much fear there was about both sides, how little connection, how little communication, how little back and forthness there is, so those kind of positions get so solidified. Also, an interesting perspective that, you know, generations now in this kind of occupied, frozen world, Israel feels like the Arab world is pushing this on them because it makes Israel look bad, where, you know, consistently there's been this issue that it is a big deal. Israel has always painted that sort of like it's a big deal because it makes Israel look bad. It's really not that big a deal. But that perspective doesn't really mesh with the world perspective, A. And B, there's another way that if that was removed, wouldn't it be interesting to see what happened? But boy, now we're talking about dreamers.
It's an important point you're making, though, because it segues to a little side note we should make that former President Jimmy Carter announced this week that he had cancer, and Jimmy Carter excoriated repeatedly, even when he doubles down. I mean, even in spite of it, he doubles down on likening what's happened in the occupied territories and in Israel to apartheid. And that separation that you are talking about, that lack of knowledge of the other, which was fundamental to slavery and then Jim Crow, even more fundamental really to Jim Crow than to slavery in some ways. You could make the argument that there was almost more familiarity between the two races in slavery than there was in Jim Crow. In Jim Crow, it was really about sequestering an entire race of people into a secondary society that was in the shadows, outside of the sort of mirroring the shadow, the society that you're living in. The same thing was true in South Africa, and the same thing is true in the occupied territories. And it does, you know, it's the same problem the United States gets into all the time. With Cuba, with the flag going up today, and the American flag went up today in Cuba. It's an amazing time. John Kerry, Secretary of State John Kerry, going there. You know, the illogic of the embargo against Cuba and sequestering them versus the engagement with China.
Right.
And the same things that you're saying about Cuba are absolutely applicable to China in spades. That illogic creates cognitive dissonance and ultimately destroys your standing, I think, internally as sort of a people psychologically, but internationally. And this is what's happened to the Israelis. The Israelis who say, you know, never again, never again. And of course, never again. Who can disagree with never again? And then you see this ghettoization of the Palestinian people, and people say, well, your rhetoric and your stated goals, dreams, and ideals do not match your behavior. And that's a difficult gap to manage for a long period of time. And I think it turns into internal decay.
Well, and to bring it back home, you mentioned about Jim Crow and all that. We also have our own indigenous colonialization program in spades. And, you know, so I'm not trying to – I love that expression, you point finger and 3-point back. This is not to come from a place of superiority, but just a place of noticing and the idea of engagement. Again, that was the other thing, because I asked Ava Drover straight out, what about Roger Waters and the BDS movement to isolate Israel to force or hope for change? And she said, you know what, we went there. They made this documentary. It was nominated for an Emmy in Belgium. It didn't win, but it's one of those things where you just let people talk, you engage, you. But that humanization is something that I think sometimes people fight against, because why wouldn't another human being have an aspiration for a state like you? So it's an interesting one. But I have to say, you know, we are talking about today, in the week that was, some interesting topics. I'll just lay them out for you. Over the Hillary, the economy doesn't suck. It just sucks for you. And I do have both feet firmly planted on the ground, folks. And also, we are not alone. Let's start with the Hillster. How about that? The spy satellite secrets in Hillary's emails. Now she says she's going to give her server up. What's up with that?
Yeah, turning it over to the Department of Justice.
Why not before?
Okay. It does look like there's some degree of mendacity from Hillary Clinton and Hillary Clinton's operatives inside her campaign toward both the Department of Justice and the media regarding the handling of classified information on the private servers. It looks like maybe they were misclassified, that things were that were labeled top secret or no foreign, N-O-F-O-R-N. That means no foreigners are allowed to see it. These are all this is information that was garnered from intercepted communications, so-called signal intelligence. And these are things that were passed through the server, and Hillary Clinton and her camp said, no, it didn't. Well, it turns out that it did. And then, you know, we had this thing a couple weeks ago where the New York Times said that the Department of Justice was investigating Hillary Clinton, and then they scrambled within an hour or two to change it to they're investigating the handling of her server to try and make Hillary not look like the target. And then they had to go out and apologize for the way they wrote the story. But now, all of the, you know, what, 10, 15 days later, it actually does look like the Department of Justice is investigating Hillary Clinton, is investigating the handling of the servers, is investigating the use of the servers to handle classified intelligence. And I think the bigger issue here, and the reason why I led off with this, and we started talking about Trump and politics, because now this campaign, which is, I don't know, James, what is it? 18 months away before an election?
It's eternity. It's hell. It's eternity.
It's a baton death march we are in here. That you are now seeing Joe Biden, who there was some talk last week that he was considering a run after Beau Biden, his son, on his deathbed, implored his father to run for president. Now there's some talk that he is considering a one-term presidency. I don't know how that would work, running for a one-term presidency. There was talk yesterday, BuzzFeed broke the story that Gore, Al Gore's sort of inside clique, was considering if there's a path to victory. This morning, then, there was a story the story appeared yesterday afternoon that said, from advisors, so you have the insiders who say Gore's looking for a path to victory, and then you have the advisors who say, no, Al Gore's not going to run against Hillary. Bernie Sanders now up to, I believe it's 44% versus 33% for Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire. So Bernie Sanders on the rise in New Hampshire. I think he's going to win New Hampshire. And I think overall, what is most interesting to me about this story is not actually the mendacity. It's not the classified intelligence on the server. I mean, you know, okay, fine. There was a story AP broke today that there was some emailing back and forth about drones. As the great Steve Horn of the Smog Blog has found by combing through emails, you can find a lot of stuff out from Hillary's emails, including pushing Mexico to privatize its longstanding oil industry, held as a sort of a nationalized industry. I think the bigger issue here is that I don't think Hillary's electable.
Well, wow. What about Jeb Bush? Remember him? He used to be somewhere in there. I don't know if...
And there's another one. And so Jeb Bush this week gives this big foreign policy speech that everybody ridicules. And he goes out and he says, all in all, he doubles down on a speech that basically said that Iraq was kind of a nifty idea ultimately. And they got bungled by Hillary. Yeah. Hillary is the... She blew... You know, we could criticize Hillary. Hillary did not blow Iraq, obviously.
Well, she voted to authorize it along with Daschle.
Right.
That's a stretch to try to put those things together and then try to leave out the part how the hell we got there.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, he left too early, but somebody went in too early, remember?
Yeah. So then he said, all in all, I think getting rid of the Saddam turned out to be a pretty good deal. Yeah, it turned out to be a pretty good deal for companies like Blackwater, which is now called Academy, and as now that they're Academy, they've scored like $171 million in contracts since 2008, and then they have a subsidiary called IDS that's gotten another almost $700 million in contracts. Yeah, it's turned out to be a good deal for people who made money off of the war. So I think there's Trump, right? Because If this was going to be a Hillary versus Bush election, which I think everybody felt was ultimately inevitable because of things like money and status and the establishment and their Wall Street ties on both ends and their hawkish natures on both ends, it is really interesting to me that Jeb Bush is struggling for oxygen and Hillary Clinton is struggling for likability and her approval ratings and her favorability ratings are below 50%, and it must have the Democratic Party really freaking out. I really think that Hillary Clinton has a long-term problem with the electorate that can only be solved by going up against somebody like Ted Cruz.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to go on record right here. I do think they're just kind of trying to do as much rope-a-dope as possible to let the clown car, Matt Taibbi, one of my favorite pieces ever written, talk about not quite Hunter Thompson, but in terms of one-liners, he got about 6, 5, 3, 4 fantastic lines in this latest piece by Rolling Stone, The Clown Car. Whatever it means, I still think it's going to come down in the end to Hillary versus Jeb Bush. I just really do think that. If not, I'm happy to be wrong. I don't mind being in uncharted waters what it'll mean. But, you know, just in terms of other things that tighten as you get closer down, hatches battened and how much the money can do. Actually, the Biden strategy of saying one term is brilliant because that's what he's saying. Hey, I'm older. I don't want to do more than that. Let's have a president who isn't out there to be in there forever. If there's something.
Well, maybe he's learned from watching Obama, who was liberated by losing in the off-year election and spending the final 2 years of his 8-year presidency doing what he wants to do.
Well, it's a good point. But we'll see. I mean, we've got a lot of clown car on both rails to go. Sanders just kind of almost being like a grown-up in a weird way because he's so consistent through all this. But, well, let's move forward. I have to say, JP, this is at least it's an interesting time. And Trump is in his element. It's head-scratching stuff. I mean, it's sort of like the Kardashians. I never kind of got that either, but it seems like a lot of people enjoy it.
It makes perfect sense to me, James. It really does. I think you look at Jeb Bush, you look at Hillary Clinton, you look at the revolving door, you look at between Wall Street and Washington, the revolving door between just about every single industry you can think of and Washington. You look at the massive amounts of money, you look at the sort of intense political corruption, post-Citizens United, and the fact that everything seems to be market-tested, right. And everybody seems to be beholden, in a funny way, everything that people are sort of assuming about Trump and his reality show persona is actually applicable more to like a Ted Cruz. It's more applicable to the politicians who are so desirous of that fame quotient and creating that brand. Trump, in a funny kind of way, because he's actually saying things. I mean, people are – you have to think of how amazing it is that he can get into a war of words with Rand Paul and say Rand Paul should just drop out because he has no chance of winning. That is – it is the most amazing, and in a sense, Donald Trump is the living embodiment – of the fact that the emperor, if the emperor is the U.S. political system, he is the living embodiment that the emperor has no clothes.
Well, that's a well said piece. Let's move on. Economy and that sucking sound of the vacuum. This is quite a story. I just talked with somebody about it a few minutes ago in town here, and also about my little insight that Amazon really is just the post office plus Walmart combined in terms of getting things to people faster. What have they really, really done? But in terms of this story, wow, GM, it was a different world when they employed the most people in the country compared to Walmart. Now, these U.S. CEOs make the most money compared to their workers. You wonder why people are freaking out about McDonald's? What's this story about?
Well, and this is McDonald's. Sales flat or declining for 13 consecutive months. They are going to close 184 stores this year. That's going to basically put them in the black. That's 59 more stores they are closing than they are actually going to open. This is, I think, the first time since 1970 or 71 that the number of McDonald's stores is actually going to go down in the United States. But that doesn't mean much to Donald Thompson, because Donald Thompson's CEO of McDonald's, and he makes 644 times the average worker at McDonald's. He makes $7.2 million. The average worker makes $11,324.
Wow.
So, hey, talk about failing upwards. And this list here that's put out by Bloomberg is in response to a new regulation that's finally been – the rules have been written and it's been implemented by the Security Exchange Commission, in which you have to report the ratio of your CEO pay to individual workers. Now, it's being called a regulation. Is it really a regulation? It's just reporting. You're just reporting facts about your company. It's being called a regulation, I think, because that just, you know, you can then turn around and say, oh, look at how overregulated we are. But I think this is kind of stuff that people could have figured out anyway, because you have to report what you pay your CEOs. Here are some of the other big heavy hitters. And here's an interesting trend. See if you can find the trend. Community Health Systems, Wayne Smith makes $26.44 million versus the $63,000 and change that the average employee makes. That's 414-1. Universal Health Services, Alan Miller, makes $18 million plus versus the $56,000 that the average worker makes. That's 329-1. Wow. And then you have Priceline. I mean, I don't think it's – and it's not Bill Shatner getting this kind of money, but Darren – Houston makes almost $22 million versus the $75,000 a year that the average employee makes. That's 294-1. But then there's Union Pacific, 262-1. Tenet Healthcare, 242-1. U.S. Bancorp, 232-1. And of course, James, it wouldn't be The Economy Doesn't Suck, It Just Sucks for You if I didn't mention J.P. Morgan Chase, 222-1. But isn't it interesting that in this post-Obamacare implementation period that you have three big healthcare companies with this outlandish CEO to worker pay ratio?
Well, you know, we talked about that before. You wonder why Supreme Court kind of backing this thing. There's some folks not too dissatisfied with the way things are going. And I tell you what, when you think about Jamie Dimon making a third less in terms of that ratio than McDonald's, I don't know, Mr. Dimon, you better get up off your couch. Anyway,
start flipping burgers, Jamie.
Even with the economy growing, food banks struggling, and this is, what do you call it, the flip side, the reality check, the whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. There's a guy from James Ziliak, I believe his name is. He's founder of the Center for Policy Research at the University of Kentucky. And he said, it's surprising that we see this growth in the use of food banks because the economy is growing and unemployment is down. Well, James Ziliak, you should listen to Inside the Headlines, because we can tell you that the economy doesn't suck for the people at the top. That's where the economy is growing. But for most of us, it's actually sucking pretty hard. In Iowa, over the last 2 years, there has been a 20% increase in the use of food banks. Overall, around the country, it is growing. In 2015, the food banks are on track to give away 4 billion pounds of food. Wow. That's 2 times the amount of food that was given away a decade ago. Wow. In 2013, it was 3.8 billion, so it's a an incremental increase, but it's still increasing. It's happening in Gloucester, Massachusetts, where Open Door, a food bank there, has seen a 7.6% increase over last year. It's happened in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where Sheila Moore, she's head of the Storehouse, the largest food bank in Albuquerque. She says they get lines of people beginning at 6:30 every morning lining up for food. And one of the problems here is that about 2.5 million people have come off of food stamps since the recession started, when there was a peak in food stamp use. Well, they're losing eligibility. So what are they doing? They're turning to food banks to try and fill their bellies in this recovering economy.
Yeah, 5.3 unemployment rate. We've talked about this. You know, the U3, it was our good friend Mr. Bill Clinton, former president, who decided to take the U6 measure out of the U3, out of combining that, because he wanted his economy to look better than Ronald Reagan's. And so since then, they thought, yeah, that's kind of, if you actually add that back right now, we're closer, I think we're over 10%. And then if you do the only 25%.
Depressed, all the underemployment, the depressed workers, the part-time workers.
Only 25% of 27 million, I think, are satisfied there. We're actually at similar levels to the Great Depression, 20%, if you put those together. And a lot of people are noticing that and saying that more than you've been, we've been. And because you wonder, where would all these lines come from? Are these guys just lazy bums? What's the matter with them?
But here's Iowa, right? With this 2 years of 20% increases, Iowa has one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country at 3.7%. So what you're seeing here, and I think you might have been getting to it, is that people may be employed, but it's not enough to feed yourself.
Well, the other thing I know somebody, a friend who worked at, let's just say, the largest corporation, without calling it by name, works a year, comes back with this 11 hours of vacation after working a year or something. They have some kind of system, and it was like, wow, it's an interesting time. But you know what? JP, we're not alone, and that there's something in that. I like this report from the Irish Examiner. Don't freak out, but scientists think octopuses might be aliens after DNA study. You mean those alien guys have been right all this time?
Well, the alien thing comes from late British zoologist Mark Wells, who noted the incredible flexibility and genetic uniqueness of the octopus. It's the California two-spot octopus, has had its genome mapped and explored. The octopus has about 10,000 more genes in human beings, 33,000 protein-coding genes in the octopus. The octopus has one of the largest sort of brain-to-body ratios.
Wow.
It's noted for its problem-solving capability. It's noted for its ability to change colors at an instant. And why is that? Because its genes are not only in excess of human beings, but they have this ability to switch on the fly. Their genes can actually, all the way through the tentacles and all parts of their bodies, switch on the fly. And what are we, where are we getting at here? Well, yesterday the Earth experienced Overshoot Day. Overshoot Day is the day that the planet goes into the red on the ecological balance sheet. That's the day when human beings have consumed a year's worth of resources and have outstripped the ability of the Earth to produce resources for an entire year. So that's basically, if you were to say humans get X number of resources for 1 year because that's what the Earth can produce, the human beings have consumed that amount of resources that the Earth can produce as of yesterday. So we are now in the red for the rest of the year. We are consuming more than the Earth can produce. And when you think about that, and you think about the mega storms that are coming and the heat waves that are coming, and there's a lot of talk about the most incredible El Nino in recent history here off of the Pacific coast, and the two heat blobs, one off of the northern Pacific coast and one off the Atlantic coast, and melting glaciers, I think it's important to remember that we share this planet with really smart, really unique, and really fascinating creatures like the octopus.
Evolution of God. Searching for the truth is a threat. Seems the closer we get to the truth, state troopers are feds. Come out to silence you. My house in Malibu probably tapped, cause living next door to Demi Moore. Plus I'm black, plus I want vengeance for the poor who's attacked daily. Patriot Act never scared me. Jake in the Taurus, sticky in the Jarvis. Niggas I'm with got warrants. America's browning. 20 years from now, every town will be brown in Latin. An African looking Manhattan. I'ma tell you what I seen with my three eyes. Word to me, not a hoax back in 99. A spacecraft in the skyline. In LA in daytime, ask horse if I'm lying.
Every mother, every father, raise your sons and your daughters with respect and with honor. From the seed comes the fruit. It's an unbroken circle. All of life is universal, and we're all in the struggle. If I know one thing is true,
oh, that's right. We are not alone. That's Naz. And I have to say, another great choice by the one and only J.P. Sotili. You are inside the headlines with James Moore on Solar Powered Crew FM. And we've got a lot of great things going on. We're going to keep on track here. We move from the week that was right into our next category, and that is the deep dive, Spraying God. This one, oh, man, if you had issues with GMOs, well, I don't know if it's bend over, spread your wings, or smile, say cheese, but the next great GMO debate, what is that going to be, JP?
About spraying gene-changing ribonucleic acid onto plants in an effort to change the genes of the plants without actually altering the seeds. Now, the seed business for Monsanto is a $9 billion per year business. That's for BT seeds. That's a seed with a toxin built into it. And then there are also the seeds that are Roundup ready, Roundup being its glyphosate-based chemical that's a weed killer, and then you put into the seeds a resistance to glyphosate, thus making those seeds really, really profitable. Well, Monsanto is trying to develop an RNA interference technology that would be an easy way to modify crops by simply spraying them instead of going into the seeds. Now, RNA, ribonucleic acid, what it does, it sort of codes, decodes, and it regulates expressions of genes inside the DNA, inside the cell, right? So the DNA uses RNA to carry out its wishes. Let's put it that way. So what these RNA interference technologies do is shut down cell functions inside the cell. Right now, it's actually being used to kill beetles. So you spray a plant with this RNA interference goo, beetles eat it, and all of a sudden the beetle's internal organs get shut down because the RNA message being sent to it after eating it is, shut down your organs. We could get into the technology of this. It's really, really interesting. It actually comes from a natural process that cells use to fight viruses. So viruses come with these sort of double strands of zipped up RNA, and then the cells create these, have this ability to use other RNA to break apart the zipped viruses. And what scientists have discovered, going back to 2006, when I think two scientists actually got the Nobel Prize for this, is that they can use that same process to go back to the cells itself and shut down the things in the cells. Now, it was initially proposed to shut down disease in cells, but here it's being used as a weapon against beetles. And I just have to say, James, do you think that the Pentagon or the military-industrial complex might find it interesting that you can just spray something on some kind of food and maybe your enemy might eat it and their internal organs may shut down?
No, we could ask, speaking of starting the day off with raising the flag in Cuba, we could ask Castro how he feels about some of these things. I have to say, reflecting on, he's been kind of glib and saying, actually saying the U.S. owes Cuba billions of dollars from the decades of embargoes for not being able to trade. But less, he's just not saying much about it. He says, I don't trust U.S. policy, but you know what? I'm all for anything that moves towards peaceful solutions, which I think, say what you want about the man, how he got there and so forth, but he is saying, you know, this is somebody who's been, how many assassination attempts? Countless, well, not countless, but a whole bunch. Never mind an invasion. Never mind this, strangling embargo, coming back with, well, you know what? I'm all for peaceful resolutions and moving forward in our hemisphere. I don't know. I find that sort of strangely, whether he's just playing to the cast
or
what.
Okay, James, Cuba, I get it. Monsanto has developed something that if you eat it, it can shut down your organs.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, hello? And now they want to turn it into, they haven't gotten there yet. They want it to be able to actually get to go into the plant's cellular, at the, go into the plant's cellular level and change its genetics there. This is an amazing technology. This story was in the MIT Technology Review. This is if you're looking for a dystopian future, if you're looking for something that needs severe regulation, incredible oversight, the ability to just spray something on something else and have any living creature eat that something and as a result have their heart stop working, I think that is a really, really important thing that people need to be aware of.
Yeah, it's my little alarm was going off as you were talking the very thing, you know. We have all these other weapons that we've talked about and shown with sound and lasers and all these different things. Yeah, it's a fascinating story. Thank you so much for...
Oh, and by the way, Bayer and Syngenta are also working on it. And Syngenta, by the way, has been a recent target of a $45 billion non-invited takeover by Monsanto, and one That's wonders right. now if they were ever to take over Syngenta, they would control 1/3 of the world's seeds. But one wonders if there's something about Syngenta's RNA interference technology that they would also like to absorb.
Yeah, well, you know what? You don't Monsanto and Agent Orange, and it goes beyond the pale. But you know what? And it's that they're even anywhere near the food supply is one of those modern miracles, and I mean that with a small M and a capital Y. Amid debate over labeling GM foods, let's stick with this one now. Most Americans believe they're unsafe. I'm going to say that again. Most Americans believe they're unsafe. Not the science, though, right?
No. Scientists at the American Association for the Advancement of Science, 88% of them say it's safe to eat. Now, 67% of Americans polled say scientists don't actually understand the implications of eating GMOs. And overall, 57% of U.S. adults say GMOs are generally unsafe. 49% of men say generally unsafe. 65% of women unsafe. 53% of whites, 68% of blacks, 65% of Hispanics, only 47% of college graduated folks say it's generally unsafe, where those with some college say that's 60%, and high school or less, 62%. The bottom line is that, okay, this polling kind of says, well, the more you know, the more you think it's safe. But James, as you and I both know, there's a lot of known unknowns and unknown unknowns in the consumption and use of GMOs, things that have not been tested. I think ultimately the question is whether or not human beings want to be guinea pigs in a grand experiment.
Yeah, they even have a choice. Also, follow the money. Your middle name is critical to this
too,
looks
yeah.
too. So how about Monsanto's cancer-linked weed killer sprayed in fields near just a couple of churches, right?
Just a couple, 12,000 within 1,000 feet of a field that's been sprayed. It's kind of been sprayed in a kind of a very sort of metaphysical way too, but sprayed with glyphosate, 5,000 within 500 feet. That's Roundup. But hey, you know what, James? Roundup is good, but did you know there's something called Enlist Duo?
No, it sounds fascinating.
Yeah, Duo, as in two. It's glyphosate plus 2,4-D. Mm-hmm. 2,4-D, D is for dichlorophenoxyzetic acid.
Wow.
And this 2,4-D, which is basically like dioxin, it leaves dioxin residues, is extra killer, and it's being put together with glyphosate to make an even deadlier form of poison that's being sprayed around churches. I just wonder if the God-fearing folk know about that.
Wow. Well, when they start lacing it, glyphosate with LSD, and then all the sunflower seeds are going like, whoa. Oh, wait, they already do that. Anyway, okay, back to whatever plane this is. Let's get onto what might be the fallout from PPO-resistant pigweeds. I love that.
Yeah, PPO, that's protoporphyrinogen. Protoporphyrinogen is another one of these chemicals, and it's used in particular as sort of a pre-spray to kill pigweeds in cotton production. But what's happening is that in Tennessee and Arkansas and all around the South where cotton is grown, you now have drug-resistant pigweeds. Why? Because nature seeks equilibrium, and because you're messing around, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. And we're not talking about parquet here. We're talking about poisons. You know, this is a fascinating piece about, because this is from Delta Farm Press. This is sort of an insider's view of it, where you have farmers looking for answers. And so what are other options? There's Direx, there's Cotteran, there's Caporal. There are all of these other chemicals. There's a variety of different poisons that are being used to deal with these pigweeds that keep marching on. By the way, pigweeds are marching. Here's the funny thing, though. Jason Norsultan or something like that. He's from the University of Arkansas, weed scientist. Here, basically, he's one of these guys who's probably got his position at a university because he's been endowed by a chemical company. It happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well endowed, probably.
Yeah, well endowed. Yeah, you don't want to
go there. Never mind. Okay, I was thinking about big wigs and pigweeds. That's why I was laughing before. Yeah, but
we're almost going off the rails here.
Yes.
We're also seeing a decent – this is him speaking. We're also seeing a decent amount of Roundup Ready Flex cotton being planted this year. There you go. So where pigweeds dare to tread.
You know what? It just – big wigs, pigweeds, and this thing, nature. You said that was so profound. Nature seeks equilibrium. Why the TFH – can't the rest of us, why can't the scientists, why can't we all do that? If nature's seeking it, maybe there's something to it. Sorry, that is a rant.
Yeah, I know.
It's just crazy. Nature seeks equilibrium. Why don't we do that? Okay, speaking of settling down, weed whackers, Monsanto, glyphosate, and the war on invasive species. This was, I think, probably got me the most incensed of the whole week thinking of this one.
Yeah, you just have to read it. It's in Harper's. It's a free article online by Andrew Coburn, and it's unbelievable. And why do we not let nature just seek its equilibrium? Why don't we let nature do that wonderful thing that she loved to do, that voodoo that she do so well? Well, as Peter Raven, who is director of the Missouri Botanical Garden, well-funded by Monsanto, by the way, a spokesperson for Monsanto, the Missouri Botanical Garden, just a few miles from the Monsanto headquarters in St. Louis, where they have 5,000 researchers working on this RNA technology to spray cellular interrupting RNA interfering goo on things that other things eat. He rose to prominence during the Clinton-Gore administration, when invasive species all of a sudden became a cause célèbre, and we got to get rid of invasive species. They're costing the country $120 billion per year. And so Monsanto said, hey, we've got something for invasive species.
We loves killing things.
Yeah, you got invasive species like eucalyptus in California. How about Roundup? You got kudzu in Georgia. How about Roundup? You got this invasive flower, sort of weed flower in Pennsylvania, how about Roundup? Illinois, Roundup. Louisiana, Roundup. And this guy, Peter Raven, said, hey, you know, what's natural anymore? If we're going to play God, we might as well be good at it.
So this one I can't handle. Let's take these. I can't do any more Monsanto.
No, I know.
Let's do these last two stories together. Monsanto mania, but also seeds, bees, and big friggin' business.
Look, this is the bottom line. It really is about following the money. Right now, six companies control all the GM seeds planted in the world. That's Monsanto, DuPont, Syngenta, Dow, Bayer, and BASF. 30 years ago, thousands of seed providers were in the seed business, and not a single seed provider had 1% market share or more.
Wait, let me just interrupt. What could possibly go wrong with chemical companies controlling seeds? What could possibly go wrong?
Nothing if you invest in them on Wall Street, because everything is going right. And should, as I pointed out earlier, should Monsanto merge with Syngenta, they will control 1/3 of one of the most elemental things that all human beings need. You have oxygen, you have water, and you have food. They will control 1/3 of basically growing food on the planet, 1/3 of all of these seeds. That's what they're after. That's what they're seeking. And that's where you get to this final story from Tucson Weekly. It's a local indie media thing. And this guy said, look, I want to investigate. Is Monsanto Satan, or is Monsanto trying to do good? Do they want to feed the world like they say they do? They're just trying to create, you know, these RNA things. You can create better tomatoes, and you can spray RNA on something during a drought and make things drought resistant. But as one activist said, look, hey, the bottom line is we all may become our own unwitting experiment in Monsanto's giant petri dish.
Beautiful stuff. That's U2 there. Another great segue. JP, wonderful job there. Let's bust through here. The week in good news. Why an oil glut may lead to a new world of energy.
Hey, Michael Clare, one of the world's experts on oil markets, the history of oil markets. This oil glut is gutting the oil industry long term. Meanwhile, the sun keeps a shining.
It sure does. Biologists find malaria parasites lost drug resistance after healthy policy changes. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, guess what? In French Guiana, they had this problem with some malaria drug caused drug resistance. And so they stopped administering the malaria drug. And guess what? The drug resistance went away because nature seeks equilibrium.
Yeah, well, that's my middle name. That's the new slogan, folks. That is beautiful. A milestone in Africa, no polio cases in one whole year.
So here's kind of the flip side, right? Hey, eliminating polio, who can argue with that? 1 year without polio in Africa. It is quite an amazing thing. Also, by the way, chicken pox because of vaccination here, rapidly declining in the United States.
All right, Denins, quickly, how margaritas are remaking American Forest. Wait, no, that's mega, that's mega fires. Go ahead.
The Carlton Complex fire in Washington burned 250,000 acres at a rate at one point of 3.8 acres per second.
Wow.
Basically, global warming and climate change is reordering the world's ecology at a rapid pace. And this is the problem with nature seeking equilibrium. She can only work so fast. Because of us, she's having to play perpetual catch up.
Wow. Well, China exporting ozone pollution to the U.S. And Gris says it's kind of fair.
It's only fair because that pollution is coming from all the plastic-making widget factories that are sending plastic tchotchkes to America for us to buy. Oh, by the way, China said today that 4,000 people a day are dying due to air pollution in China.
Wow. Okay, Hollywood isn't even trying to include more women. This is unbelievable. We've been railing about this for how long? And it's like
on it.
Same, right?
Yeah. Quartz. Here are the totals. From 1990 to 2014... 95% of all director jobs went to men, 89% of all writing jobs, men, 83% of all producing jobs, men, and 69% of all acting jobs, men. I, for one, I like to see the ladies act.
Well, these men do, too, in a certain way that is part of the reason.
Yeah.
And not only that, just think how that colors everything that comes out of Hollywood. I'm going to get off this one, but 5 women out of 100, not last year, but since 1990, for 25 years, nice progress, guys. Liberal Hollywood, my ass. All right,
there
sorry.
You go.
Hollywood, you get on it. Speaking of non sequiturs and interesting juxtapositions, was Hooters chased out of El Salvador by gang extortion?
I know, I can't help myself sometimes, but this is actually a quite serious topic because it's not really about Hooters being the first U.S. chain to leave El Salvador. It's the fact that they left El Salvador because of extreme violence in El Salvador, where basically gangs are in open war with the government, and 90% of the murders in El Salvador go unsolved every year.
Okay, sorry. Hollywood Old Boys Club. Jesus, get a grip, get a life. Come on. Liberal Hollywood?
I know.
Old Boys Club, get a grip. Don't pretend. Do something about it. Just do something. There's plenty of women. Sorry, this just drives me crazy. Oh, I sound like that crazy guy on the stock exchange floor now. Woo-hoo! All right.
Well,
okay.
As long as you're not talking about giving them binders full of women that they can choose from, you're okay.
Well, I'm not doing that, but there are plenty of women in directing and a lot of areas doing things, and it's just crazy. There's got, you know, the ACLU is just this far from doing a lawsuit about it, so I'm encouraging them. American paratroopers in Ukraine. Speaking of rattled, Putin's head shaking a little, huh?
Yeah, and this is with General Ray Odierno, who's leaving as Army Chief of Staff, saying Russia's our number one enemy, and there are warmongers over there, and NATO saying we're not trying to incite Russia. Meanwhile, you got paratroopers in war games with Ukrainian troops on the Polish border. I wonder if Russia feels surrounded. I know. So come on, move on. Let's go.
Give BB the Nobel Peace Prize. This is two in a row I'm in.
This one is, it's actually kind of hilarious. This is Aaron David Miller writing in Foreign Policy, who is, this is not a pro-Iranian guy. This is a pro-Israeli, Jewish-American foreign policy commentator saying, BB, by constantly running around saying the sky is falling and constantly overplaying his hand on the Iranian threat, basically pave the way for the Iranian deal, just desserts, according to Aaron David Miller.
Well, interesting point of view. I mean, Obama got a Nobel Prize, and you know what? For many things I say I don't like about him, Cuba and Iran, that's some good stuff.
Pretty good
there.
Stuff, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
In Congo, can the guerrillas survive the chaos of civil war?
One quarter. Now, the Congo has been in civil war for decades. It is really, really bad. There's the Virunga National Park, which is where a lot of this fighting is going in and out of. And I just want to give you this total. Virunga is 3,000 square miles, and that's where one quarter of Virunga mountain gorillas live. There are 880 left. One quarter of them live in this park. One quarter of 880 left. Folks, 880 mountain gorillas left.
Amazing. Well, a new study showing that the trade in South African lion bones is surging. And also, how about this comfort food? What's it doing to your brain?
Well, this thing about lions, people do not realize that there is a lion breeding industry in South Africa. You have of the 9,100 lions in South Africa, two-thirds are bred in captivity, and they're being killed, and their bones being shipped for so-called traditional medicine, which has been debunked, folks. Traditional medicine was created by Mao during the Chinese communist state. There was no such thing as traditional medicine before Mao created it as a propaganda tool. And then finally, speaking of propaganda tools, people turn to comfort food, right? And this is in quotes. And so you feel depressed, so you eat comfort food. But guess what? It turns out that the glycemic index of the comfort food causes depression.
Oh, man.
It's kind of perfect. So if you're in the Kraft macaroni and cheese business or the comfort food business, which is generally junk foody stuff, you've kind of have a perpetual machine there.
Well, maybe they can just spray some,
there you go.
Some antidepressants on along with the iron. Okay. Speaking of, folks, you made it through another Inside the Headlines. Happy Hour is ready to go. We've spilt over a little bit at the seams, but our final story brings it all home, brings it all to the next level, gets us into the weekend. It's called The Great Mellowin' Man.
That's baby. That's Texas, deep down in the heart of Texas. Willie Nelson, who has co-opted his longstanding buddy Merle Haggard, who used to be an anti-hippie guy. Well, guess what? Their embracing of marijuana, their proposing of marijuana, God's country is Texas. They are beginning to follow the lead with Willie Nelson and just take a load off and put a load in and open up their minds.
Whee-hee! All right, JP, thanks so much. And we've made it to happy hour. I can't wait to see you next week. Well, hear you anyway.
Ciao, folks.
Later.
Well, it's all going to pot. Well, whether we like it or not, best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and we're sure gonna miss it a lot. All of the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee, stood and hit the spot. I got a $100 bill, friend, you keep your pay.